countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Caller Gas, celebrating 80 years, bringing energy to Ireland's homes and businesses.
Now, since March, a regular on the programme throughout the summer has been economist Jim Power, a friend of the programme, and we said we'd give Jim a buzz again. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Damien. How you doing?
You've been kind of keeping us up to date on where we're going throughout the summer, and I saw Pascal Donoghue yesterday saying that the deficit this year is going to be 21 billion. We spend 21 billion more than we're taking in. Now, the good news is that there was talk it was going to be 30 billion. So, I suppose, what about that 21 billion deficit? Is it manageable?
Okay, yeah, 21 billion was penciled in. And as you say, back in July, the department was suggesting 30 billion, which would have been manageable. So 21 is very manageable. It's about 6.1% of GDP. It's big, but in the circumstances, I don't think we should be concerned about it. Two things have really happened since March. One is that the income tax take has held up quite well. That's because a lot of the higher paid workers in the economy, in foreign direct investment, financial services, public sector workers, they continue to earn and they pay most of the income tax, whereas is those that have been worst affected are lower paid workers in the hospitality sector and retail who don't get paid as much, don't pay as much tax. That's one thing. The second thing is, and I think this is really important, because we hear a lot of criticism about foreign direct investment and its impact and influence in the economy, but there's been a massive growth in tax revenues paid by the multinationals this year, and that is saving us as well in the circumstances.
And is that because of our low corporation tax rate that attracts them here?
It is indeed, Damien. Two things. We've seen 245,000 jobs supported here at the moment by multinationals all over the country. And the second thing is that over the last few years, because of international tax changes, quite controversial globally, a lot of intellectual property assets have moved in here. And while, you know, not a lot of tax is paid on them, some tax is being paid, and the Irish Exchequer is benefiting from that.
Yeah.
So in the current circumstances, to be honest, FDI is an important anchor for the economy, as indeed is the agri-food sector, which was the case again back in 2007-2008.
Okay. Now, Jim, why are we able to borrow at near 0% in the markets?
It's because the European Central Bank has ensured that we can. The European Central Bank, and indeed other central banks around the world, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of England, the Federal Reserve in the United States, they have been going into the markets buying government bonds. And when you buy government bonds as a central bank, as a central bank, the price of the bonds rises, the yields fall. Okay, there's an inverse relationship. So by buying bonds, they're pushing bond yields down. And that's what they've been doing aggressively, because they want to make sure that countries around the world, particularly around Europe, including Ireland, are able to borrow as much as they need at the moment to keep their economies and societies alive. So that ECB strategy is the reason why Ireland is now able to borrow for 10 years at virtually zero. And that is really, really important in the current circumstances. And of course, the hope is that the European Central Bank will maintain this stance for at least the next couple of years, because it is going to take some time, obviously, to get back to some semblance of normality. And in the meantime, and I think correctly so, governments are going to run big deficits, are going to spend a lot of money to try and keep their economies and societies alive.
Okay, we know, obviously, we discussed Brexit in the past, and we had John Bruton last week painting a very bleak picture of a no deal and the effects on the Irish rural economy and farming in particular. But you have another worry, and that is the US election. And if Donald Trump wins, the possible impact that that might have. This is not an anti-Trump thing we're going on, but you feel that his stance in relation to free trade could affect us.
Okay, I've looked, obviously, we've all looked at what Trump has been doing over the last 4 years, and he's had a very, very belligerent attitude to international relations. He's had an ongoing trade dispute with the Chinese, which incidentally does get a lot of popular support in the United States, because the latest polls I saw show that over 70% of Americans are not happy with the behavior of China. So we've seen that trade battle go on. But I think this is what concerns me, is that he has also turned his attention on the European Union. And I fear that if Trump were to be re-elected, that all hell could break loose thereafter, because I think, you know, he wouldn't have to worry about a re-election. So I think he could really up the ante and really damage global trade, and particularly trade between the United States and the European Union. Mm. That would not be good for Irish farming, there's no doubt about that, or indeed for European farming and the agri-food sector. Right. Biden, on the other hand, I've looked at what his key policies are insofar as he has elucidated what they are. But, you know, he wouldn't necessarily roll back on this protectionism that Trump has introduced, but I don't believe he wouldn't accelerate it, and I think he would be much more conciliatory. And I think Biden would recognize the importance of a good relationship, yeah, political and economic, between the United States and the European Union. So, and maybe I'll be blatantly political about this, I really, really do hope, in terms of global political stability and economic stability, right, that Biden actually wins the election.
Right.
I think it's important.
All right, Jim. Finally, and very, very briefly, speaking of farming and trade, the Mercosur trade agreement, now under some pressure with a European Parliament vote against it this week. Is it a fatal blow?
I think it was always going to be incredibly challenging to get Mercosur across the line, because it is full of inherent inconsistencies, particularly about the standards that apply in Europe to agricultural production and so on, and the standards that apply in the Mercosur countries. We were told that there would be serious regulation of how Mercosur production, the Mercosur countries produce food and so on, but I never believed that was going to be possible. So it was, against that backdrop, you know, I think Mercosur is definitely in trouble. And I think European farmers can breathe a sigh of relief for the foreseeable future. It's going to take a lot of work to get it across the line, because I think it's inconceivable that you could have Mercosur countries getting free access to Europe while at the same time not applying the standards of production that European farmers are expected to adhere to.
Yeah, and that has always been the worry. Jim, thanks a million for that. Let you out for your ramble now Saturday morning, as you usually do on the bike. So thanks very much for chatting to us this morning. We'll touch in with you again in a few weeks.
Always a pleasure, Damien. Happy 10-10-20 to all your listeners, okay?
Happy 10-10-20. Yeah, Farmers' Day, Fertiliser Day today. All right, we're getting lots of texts on that, by the way, as well.